Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Drop the Mic. The battles are even more epic this season on Drop the Mic. TBS brings you celebrities as you've never seen them before as they throw down to see who can burn their opponent best and be crowned the rap battle champion. Sunday's all-new episode features Terry Crews versus Louis Fonzie and Seth Rogen versus Joseph Gordon-Levitt as they face off on stage to see who disses will reign supreme. Catch this all-new episode of Drop the Mic Sunday at 10:30 or 9:30 Central on TBS, hosted by Method Man and Haley Baldwin.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
Hey everybody, it's Dave. One half of this podcast. The same Dave who's slept most of the day yesterday because of his allergies. The same Dave who hates this time of year. But whatever.
You mean playoff hockey time or do you mean allergy time?
Allergy time and playoff hockey time when there's no playoff hockey because the NHL refuses to schedule the second round before the first round's over.
I'm Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, and you're in Puck Soup. I saw your lament on Tuesday when there was no hockey, and I thought it was really interesting because, like, I know you kind of hate hockey pretty much, and I thought it was fun that you played along with the rest of the people who were like, I can't believe there's no hockey on, and you're like, golly gee whiz, me too, even though I know you don't give a fuck that there's no hockey.
What? What? You ignorant slut.
Ignorant slut.
I hate the NHL. I love playoff hockey.
I saw someone quote that the other day about you, that you hate the NHL but
I
love hockey.
That.
And I saw somebody being like, that's, you've spoken to my bittersweet heart.
That's everybody though. That's every hockey fan. Every hockey fan loves hockey and hates the NHL because a hockey league would have had a second round game tonight or yesterday. But we can't have it.
Are we the only league that's like that? Like, I feel like everybody who likes basketball loves the NBA
right
now. They have
definitely started NBA series. Like,
but no, I mean, as far as like loving your sport but hating your league, I probably the NFL might be.
Yeah,
although I don't know, I feel like people just are starting to just kind of hate football in general because of the injurious nature of it.
Yeah, I think football's more of a consistent hate between the two ideas as opposed to hockey, where. Again, I always come back to this. Like, the reason why the NHL isn't as popular as other sports is, think about all the other avenues of hockey that there are that's better. Not necessarily a higher level of hockey, but better.
Right.
Like, you have junior, you have the AHL, if you live in an AHL. I'm not going to go through them all, but there's a lot of other hockey avenues to watch. And when it's up against a league that says, hey, guess what? It's the second round of the playoffs. Congratulations on your President's Trophy. You're playing the second best team now in the second round.
Or we have a schedule, but we can't tell you what it is.
I know.
So if you're someone who maybe wants to book a hotel room for this series, you can do it, but maybe do the thing where you can cancel.
Yeah, don't do that suite reservation rate where you can't cancel it because then you might get screwed.
Don't get the one with the double beds and the Wi-Fi and the breakfast because then you probably can't cancel it.
What's the rationale at this point behind not putting out the three-round schedule and then having the contingency in the other one? I don't understand.
As we do the podcast, the rest of the second round hasn't been announced yet, but like, it's got to be Canadian television, right? It's got to be like one of these things where...
But you can still have two setups. It's either going to be one or the other, right? Like, whether it's Toronto or Boston, you're still going to have your broadcast plan one way or the other.
Yeah, I feel like they've done it before where it's like every other series is locked in. And it's not... I mean, is there a team that's kind of like fucked it up where maybe the building... They didn't know the building was going to have to be available for it. Maybe Vegas is the only one I can think of.
No, but even if there is a building issue, you know what the building issue is one way or the other, no matter who wins Boston-Toronto tonight. Yeah. You can still put out the schedule.
It's all right. I mean, they also have to find out the availability of the Golf Channel schedule as well.
I mean, there is a big Deutsche Bank round robin pro-am or something.
Hey, I got some bad news, sir. What is it? Well, the National Hockey League second round schedule came out, and we're going to have to preempt Sports Century : Fuzzy Zeller.
We have a bad news. Jim Cramer's doing a marathon on MSNBC about what stocks to buy.
God damn it. So. CNBC.
Is he? I don't know.
They would never put a game on MSNBC. They get ratings on MSNBC.
They've never had a game on MSNBC?
No, never.
Yeah, they all kind of blend together, all the NBCs.
Hi, I'm Chris Hayes. Join me after the game for more investigations into the Trump crime family.
See, like, the Rachel Maddow pregame show is perfect because she would just ask rhetorical questions for 15 minutes about the series. Bruins, Leafs, who's going to win? Who gets the puck first? Who scores first?
The Rachel Maddow pregame would be exploring one issue of the series for 40 minutes.
Without really... honestly, I don't watch Rachel Maddow, but the one thing I watched was the whole IRS tax document thing,
right.
And it was the worst 20 minutes of it. I remember sitting there being like, does she do this every week where she just teases a thing and never has anything at the end of it?
Of course,
it? Oh my
who
God.
Is the backup for Matt Murray? That would be Tristan Jarry. Tristan Jarry, who you may remember, was in fact, you know, on and on and on.
Is it Casey DeSmith or Tristan Jarry?
Oh, who gives a shit? It ain't Marc-Andre Fleury, I'll tell you that. We'll get to that series in a second. First off, the big news today.
My caps.
Las Vegas Mayor Carolyn G. Goodman. This is a story from earlier this morning.
Mm-hmm. I don't even
know. This is on her Twitter.
I don't even know what the story is.
She says on Twitter, because all politicians now are on Twitter, like, and breaking news on Twitter like Kanye.
Is she making a bet with, like, if you win, you get poker chips. If I win, I get shark meat or something?
Just got off the phone with 98.5 KLUC. There's a fucking station called K-Luck in Vegas? Come on now.
Where else would it be?
All right.
You have K-Luck, K-Broke. K
bust.
K, yeah. K double down.
Oh, you know there has to be KRPS craps.
Roll the dice and call in now and talk live about the construction going on the strip.
We are your combat. Craps 98.5.
Then you have like people calling you. A guy on the radio said combat. Is that – I think that violates some laws.
All right. We're going to go around the horn on craps. Dateline Shanghai. I play way too much craps.
It looks like the Vegas Golden Knights are going to split from the playoffs.
Whoa.
After the San Jose Sharks put up 2-8 in games 3 and 4 to sweep the series.
Traffic at 7-11 on craps.
And like every radio station, like every show ends like, that's it for me. Coming up next is Bill Johnson. He's going to give you all the talk you want about the UNLV running Rebels. And you just hear. they just leave the booth.
Hey, everybody. I'm John Gibson, new shooter here on Craps. So anyway, Carolyn G. Goodman, the mayor of Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
How does one become mayor of Las Vegas? Just like.
Oh, I'm assuming like it's mafia related. Oh, yeah. She was installed by like a crime family.
I promise not to do anything of note. Or you're elected.
I promise to legalize. Shit, is there anything here that's not legal?
Era, I feel it is outrageous that murder is done. That was like the Purge. Just got off the phone with KLUC, K-Luck. And we've decided to ban in Las Vegas as our Golden Knights play the San Jose Sharks. Dave Lozo. Hold on. Let's do match game. Yeah. Carolyn G. Goodman, the mayor of Las Vegas, called into a radio station and she said, as long as my Golden Knights are playing the San Jose Sharks, the city of Las Vegas will ban blank.
Choking.
Do.
No. I guess you can't really ban that. Like if someone starts choking in a casino, they just throw them out. They don't help them.
Charles Nelson Reilly, I said the color teal. Hmm. They're banning the color teal from Las Vegas.
Is that what it is?
It really is.
I was trying to think of like a musical group that has like shark in its name. I'm like, the Sharks and the Jets? Is that like a...
Well, that's just it. I mean, like it is a... It's a city of card sharks because you can't be like, oh, we're going to ban sharks. You can't do it.
Like every casino's empty for the next 2 weeks. Like, not think this through.
Shit. All the high rollers leave for like Reno for a week.
Like the what do you call it? Your residency of Katy Perry, like her entire shark show is now canceled.
Yeah.
Like,
left shark, right shark. I can no longer appear at Planet Hollywood until you reinstate sharks. The banning the color teal. How does one enforce this if you're Las Vegas? I imagine there's a lot of people that wear teal because like, it's really nice and sunny there.
Like it are like
from the city.
Employees or just tourists? So let's say me and a buddy, we're rolling up to the arena for game one. Me and my Joe Thornton jersey, you know, him and his Pavelski jersey.
Okay.
Like I can be handcuffed and led away into like a paddy wagon and then thrown in jail. Is that the deal here?
I think you bring up an interesting question, which is
you know we need cops to get more reasons to arrest people. That's a really good idea. Good job, Barry.
I also wonder about the amount of teal. Like, what is the if you have a trace amount of teal and you're wearing like the black Sharks jersey, which doesn't have a lot of teal
still
on it.
Teal though.
It's a, like, is there? Is it like weed rules where if you have a, if you're, you know, if you, if you're carrying a certain amount,
yeah,
it's criminal.
It's like trafficking. Your, and, it's like it's intent to distribute
right,
your jersey.
Right.
As opposed to just a recreational amount of your jersey.
You've did, you, you clearly have intent to distribute teal by wearing this home Logan Couture jersey.
But like, what does the story say? Like, what they're going to do if somebody was wearing it? Like, are they going to like throw them out of
it? Oh, buddy, you're really putting in too much import as if this is a story.
This
it's
is, this
literally
is a stupid
her
thing.
Tweeting.
Oh, she, oh, oh, but she's, but she went on a radio station and
yeah,
said it
3 hours ago before we did this show. We've decided to ban the color teal in Las Vegas as our Golden Knights play the
here's,
San Jose Sharks.
Here's my prediction. It won't be police related or anything, but yeah, some drunken ass Vegas fans are going to see someone in a Sharks shirt now and beat the shit out of them because they're wearing teal. The mayor said you can't wear that here. And they're going to... It's a stupid...
So you think it's going to incite violence.
I think it's a stupid idea. I think mayors should stay out of the sports shit whenever...
You know that there's somebody in Vegas that has, like, the teal bar. You know, it's like some bar themed to teal.
Or like
and then like, the, one of the waitresses ran in and she's like, Charlie, have you seen the proclamation from the mayor? What the fuck are we going to do?
Like all the pools are closed because the water's too close to teal. Everyone get in there and piss. We got to change the colors immediately or we're going to have to close down for the week.
That
mayor said so.
A brilliant move if you don't want Peter Thiel in your city.
what's that tropical blue drink that everyone likes by, that you sit by the pool with?
You mean like a blue breeze? Hawaiian or electric blue. Lemonade or?
Wow, you know all of them, don't you?
Which, I mean, so I've been told.
Well, technically, what Caribbean island would I be ordering them in? Because that's another thing you can't do.
I don't want to say that I'm a drunk, but I will say this: nothing makes me angrier in life. Okay, maybe Nazis, but second to that is when they give you a drink in the wrong glass. What say you to that? Like, you
care.
Know what it should be in, but you don't get the right glass. You don't give a shit. It just can come in anything.
You could put it in a solo cup. You can put it in a champagne glass. It's all the same.
Martinis in particular, I feel like you have to tell me ahead of time.
But why?
Okay. Because if you give me martinis in a like a highball glass.
Uh-huh.
Or like fucking with something without a stem.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like stems are the thing, baby. Nice stems. I feel like... If you give me a martini in a glass that doesn't have a stem, you need to tell me that beforehand. If you give me a glass of wine in a glass that doesn't have a stem, you need to tell me that beforehand as well.
Does it taste different?
It's the experience of it.
The experience.
Yeah.
See, this goes back to your deep-rooted feelings about why Star Wars is better than Empire. A New Hope is better than Empire because of like
the visceral thrill of
the meaning of it and like what was behind
the exhilaration of experiencing it.
Right. It still tastes exactly the same.
It doesn't.
It's the same
no,
drink.
It's the experience of it.
It's the experience of getting bombed. It's the experience of the flavor of the drink. The glass is incidental.
If you give me a slice of pizza on a pizza-shaped plate, then I'm not going to like it as much because I'm going to feel like you think I'm a child and that I couldn't handle it on a regular plate. And
oh,
I would
like
feel constricted to it. I'd feel constricted. I feel like those things. And then also, like, if you give me the worst thing. Here's the worst thing about my drink problem.
Here's the thing, baby.
Not my drinking problem. My drink problem. It's that when you're at a bar and you get the list of drinks and then you're looking over at the bar and you see different because I'm a big fan of the glasses, obviously. You see one glass that's like the fucking thing that Molaram had to make people drink blood out of in Temple of Doom. Like, it
sure.
is like the most exorbitant. What's the word I'm looking for? It's the
flashy?
Most over the top.
Flashy, yeah. You're there. You're right.
And gaudy.
Gaudy, good word.
Glass that they have. And I'm looking at this menu and I'm like, I'm not going to ask what drink goes in it because that's kind of like ostentatious. I'm not going to be like that.
But you do care.
But I do care. I care enough to think, okay. I'm looking at this thing. It's like a skull. It's got like beads on it and shit.
Okay.
And then if I see something that's like the Voodoo Mai Tai cocktail palooza, I'm like, that's got to be it. And then you order it and then it comes in like a fucking like regular glass. And I get real pissed off.
See, this is doubly dumb because you could just request the ostentatious glass. Ooh, ostentatious. Is that the word we're looking for?
I think so, maybe.
And then have it in there and you could be happy within everything you want. But instead, you keep it quiet and then get mad when the person doesn't bring you the thing that they don't mentally know that you want.
So, and that's just it. I mean, it all comes down to my deepest psychological failing, which is that people not knowing exactly what I'm thinking at all times.
Admitting the weird thing that you... So, like, if we were both in Temple of Doom... Not Temple of Doom. If we were both in...
Last Crusade.
Yeah, you die, I live, because I don't care what the cup looks like.
Right, you would drink from the cup of a carpenter.
Right, I would have...
I'd
have eternal life. And you'd be like, well, eternal life is great and all, but look how sweet this gold chalice is.
This one's got giant golden wings on it, and it's got a halo that somehow floats above it at all times. It's amazing.
Greg, it says this will kill you on the side of the glass. No, that's just a Banksy. That just makes the glass even cooler. I'm drinking out of it.
All right. Listen, motherfucker, you wouldn't have even known there was an invisible bridge there if it wasn't for me, all right? I think I know my way around this last crusade.
Jehovah's with a... What was it again? There's like the spelling of Jehovah was a trick or whatever.
It was like Jehovah is...
Jehovah's spelled with a W or something.
But in Hebrew, yeah. Jehovah's spelled with a W. Yeah.
And when he's going through the things, the saw blades come through and they're cutting back and forth. And Sean Connery's like, the petulant man, the petulant man, the petulant man. And then Harrison Ford's like, the petulant man kneels. And then he kneels down.
I've come to learn that one of my favorite movie tropes is, first noticed this in Reservoir Dogs, where you could shoot Tim Roth in the stomach.
Right.
He could bleed for 16 hours and not die. Sean Connery, an old man, gets shot in the stomach. He doesn't die for like 2 hours.
You just bleed out.
Right. And an Atomic Blonde, the guy Spyglass, I forget his name in real life. He's in a million things. He also gets shot in the stomach. Put some duct tape over it and he's fine. Like, what world is this where people get shot in the stomach and can't die?
Right. It's like we need him in this part of the movie. What should we do? Oh, we'll just shoot him in the stomach. Everyone knows it takes a really long time for you to die when you get shot in the stomach.
Like, there's no way it takes like that long. I don't know. I've never been shot in the stomach, so I don't know. Yeah. But it just seems like it doesn't take as long as they want to make it out to in movies.
And he pours the Holy Grail on Sean Connery, and it heals it, right? Mm-hmm. It bubbles up like Alka-Seltzer and heals it. But does the bullet pop out, or does it just kind of like plaster over it? I forget.
That's a really good question.
Because when Logan heals himself, the bullet pops out.
Pops out.
Yeah, it does.
Maybe the water dissolves the bullet inside of him.
This Jesus water is pretty incredible. It dissolves metal.
But that's how Logan dies, is because the metal inside of him is now leaking into his bloodstream. So maybe Sean Connery dies like 4 seconds after the credits run on the horse. He just tips over the side of it.
Mm-hmm. I still think Logan would have been a better movie if a mutant played by Ricky Gervais was living with Stephen Merchant in that shack.
Oh, you offended there? You offended by sunlight there? Oh, I'm sorry if I offended you with my sunlight.
I said I'm fine.
Are you having a laugh? It sounds like you're having a laugh. Is he having a laugh?
I'm a glorified truffle pig, ain't? Right. Sorry, I can't smell out the humans. Are you offended by my inability to not find humans?
Oh, man.
Hmm.
Nobody ever gets shot in the head and they're bleeding out. Like, uh-oh.
Hmm. I was watching the first Mission Impossible before they became like these intricate things.
Mm-hmm.
The ending to that movie, at the time it was stupid. Mm-hmm. You look back and watch it now. Phelps and the French lady and
they're
Tom
all
Cruise,
on the train.
He shoots her in the stomach and she dies instantly, by the way. And that bullet. I can't figure out what's going on in that scene because he kills her, elbows him in the head, doesn't murder him, leaves him alive.
Right.
Then they go up on the train, and then before the train goes in the tunnel, both Phelps and Cruise fall off of the train going 150 miles an hour.
Right.
And like they cut back to it again, and Tom Cruise is hanging off the side.
Mm-hmm.
He's not attached to it like Jim Phelps is.
No.
This is
just really strong.
He has ballet
fighting moves.
Go back, like the fourth most ridiculous thing is Jean Reno flying the helicopter inside the fucking tunnel. There's three other ridiculous things that happened before that. You're just like,
let's do it. The worst one was 2, obviously.
Count that one. 2 is
that was a John Woo movie. It had a lot of flying doves.
There were doves.
Yep,
there were doves at the end.
Now a lot of people to go back to our Logan discussion. A lot of people don't know that Dougray Scott, that guy who played the villain, was actually slated to play Wolverine in the...
Wait, who's Dougray Scott? I don't know that
person. Or maybe he was... Was he up for Wolverine or was he up for... Oh, you know... Or was he up for... who's the cat... what's his face from...
Garfield.
No. Okay, hang on.
Cheshire.
Who's the dude that played that dude in... Lord of the Rings that was in Eastern Promises, the real shit kicker.
Viggo Mortensen.
I think that dude was supposed to play Viggo Mortensen's dude in Lord of the Rings, the bad guy that was in Mission Impossible 2.
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, wait, no.
Was in Mission
I'm
Impossible
really
2.
Fucking up my movie history. Okay. Dougray Scott was supposed to play Wolverine, but didn't. And then it wound up being Hugh Jackman. But the dude who played Stuart Stuart Townsend.
Don't know who that is.
Who was, I forget. Oh, he played. Did you ever see League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Oh, yeah.
He played dude with the painting. Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
He played that guy in that movie, and he was supposed to play fucking Viggo Mortensen's dude in Lord of the Rings.
That guy?
That was vague.
Yeah.
Trying to remember shit in a really hot room history.
It is warm in here again,
isn't it?
It's
warm in here. You got the AC crank, buddy?
Man.
It's good times. What the fuck were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So, okay. So two is the worst. Okay. Now we get into some trouble.
The other ones all kind of run together.
The other ones are all pretty good.
They're all the same, kind of.
Number one is Rogue Nation. Did you agree with that?
Which one's Rogue
Nation?
That was
four. That was climbing on the side of the giant building.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The sandstorm comes around.
I would say the first Mission Impossible is number two for me. I love that movie in a big way.
It does not hold up.
It has the best set piece of any of these movies.
Which is what?
When he goes in and dangles from the ceiling and he's in the room to steal the disc.
You look back now, man, and that movie feels like it's from like 74. Like, you know how like you watch a movie from like back in the day when your parents watch movies in their 20s? You're just like, what was this?
You're like, why are they all driving cutlasses and then having chases on foot? So you would say what? You would say the last one would be number two, or number three would be number two? Number three with Philip Seymour Hoffman, which was pretty baller.
I like that one. I think I like that one the best, actually. I'll go Philip Seymour Hoffman.
We'll just say three and four are one and two. So that means that do you like the first one better or the last one with Rebecca Hall better?
Rebecca Hall is the one.
She's the assassin. It's the whole thing in the opera house.
That one was okay, I guess.
I like the first one better than that one.
Yeah, I like that one. I think I like the last one the least, but it's still good.
So we'll go three and four tied for first, and then one, and then the last one, and then number two is like way in the back.
Yeah, like
number two is like Attack of the Clones in this situation.
The plot of two is just insanely stupid.
The plot of two is like it's labyrinthine. You can't even figure out the fuck's going on.
It's that, and it's also just like the whole plot is to send Thandie Newton back to her ex boyfriend who may murder her at any moment. It just doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it. It's weird how Thandie Newton is now in two things that make no fucking sense.
Oh, how dare you, sir! Westworld makes perfect sense. Let me rephrase that. It'll all make perfect sense, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm not committing my time to something nonsensical like it was Lost, even though...
It's exactly the same thing.
And it was funny. Like, I'm watching it, and one of the last credits in the opening sequence is, like, produced by J.J. Abrams. I'm like, wait a second.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
That's it. I watched the premiere. I watched the season two premiere, and I'm like, that's it. I'm out. Dealer's out.
Last episode of Westworld's going to be like, turns out they're not robots. They're angels in purgatory.
Oh, man. it's just fucking one fucking speech after another from the blonde cowgirl robot person.
Oh, you mean Evan Rachel Wood.
Evan Rachel Wood, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just I love that show.
Boring.
It's great.
Boring dialogue.
So wrong. All right. You believe...
I believe that Caps will win. Caps will win.
This is a safe space. Is this a bit?
It's Caps and no more than six. We won't even need a seventh game in
this
series.
That's because you know they can't win a seventh game. It's the same reason I picked the Leafs in six in this series that's still going on as we do the show.
This is it. This is the year.
Now tell everybody out there why it's the year.
Oh, come on. We don't have that much time. We've already blown like 20 minutes on Mission Impossible and
yeah, but now we're going to get to the less important stuff. So tell everybody why you think it's the Caps' year.
Well, for one, already Evgeny Malkin's out game one. The guy that really matters the most.
He traveled. Right.
Not playing game one, though.
No.
So already the Caps are up 1-0 in this series.
Right.
They're up 1-0 in this series. It's just the year, man. They're just different. Like the Caps teams of the past would have shit their pants on three different occasions against the Blue Jackets. Didn't do it. Braden Holtby's coming in more rested because he was dog shit the last 2 months, but he's not dog shit now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the time. The Penguins are worn down. The Penguins won that series in six, but man, like they didn't really look impressive.
Consistent. They let the door open more than a few times for the Flyers to win that series.
If the Flyers had just put Ron Hextall on that for 3, 4, 5, and 6, there's probably a game seven. Like how insanely bad is Dave Hextall at managing his goaltenders? They're all the same, and he's like, I'm riding Brian Elliott, the guy who hasn't played in 2 months because of core muscle surgery.
Yeah, but in fairness to him, it's like fucking you got to make dinner. You open up the fridge. There's a thing of rotten eggs. There's brown lettuce, and then there's just a bag of shit. And you're like, all right, I got three ingredients. What the fuck am I going to do here?
No, it's more like you open up the fridge and you have like three awful hungry man dinners of just varying types. Like one's barbecue, one's chicken, one's a burger. and you just ride the chicken one the whole time, when just try the burger.
If I may, there's absolutely no way that Brian Elliott isn't a Salisbury steak. He's got to be the Salisbury steak of the Hungry Man dinners.
He's more the vegetarian one. No meat on those bones, just wilting away every time.
Peter Mrazek's the one where it's like you thought it was a good purchase at the time, like that's your like mushroom lasagna.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a second, what was I thinking?
But at some point, you got to try the mushroom lasagna, man. Like, right. You have to.
And Michael Neuwirth is like, you know, I could just order a burger. But then again, I've got this Hungry Man burger here. I might as well just have that instead.
It probably wouldn't have mattered, but just, you know, you just want to see a coach who's willing to just try something. They're all the, like, if you have, like, the Devils in Game 3. Like, mm-hmm. Corey Schneider kind of started off a little shitty.
Right.
But at that point, you're not going to go back to Keith Kincaid. You just went back to – but, like, if you have three goalies that are all these 905 terrible goalies with mediocre postseason numbers – actually, Mrazek and Neuwirth had good numbers coming in. But Dave Hakstol, man, loves his Radko Gudas, loves his Brian Elliott. They're battlers. They're battling, Greg.
They're battling. But I agree with you that the Penguins did not win in convincing fashion.
They had two shutouts and the other four games were kind of just like –
but
helter skelter.
When they turn it on, they are mm-hmm. quite good. And I'm wondering if they are going to be more locked in against this hated rival opponent that they're very confident they could win against.
Perhaps too confident.
Oh, you think now they're overconfident?
A little too confident.
Would you agree that the Washington Capitals are icing their thinnest lineup against
the
Pittsburgh
Penguins? They're so not as deep compared to the other ones, but I mean, again, go back to Game 6, man. Like, they got that cheesy goal in the third period of Game 6 that shouldn't have happened to make it a one-goal game. And who steps up? Devontae Smith-Pelly,
yeah.
Chandler Stephenson.
I talked to Devontae Smith-Pelly after that game, and like, I'm like, so you're getting your first taste of this Penguins series, huh? And he's like, yeah, I'm ready for it. I was like, I'm excited about it.
That's what you need. You need guys like that don't have the psychological beatdown of the last 2 years. Like,
I think
he's ready to go.
I think they've got like three or four guys that haven't been a part of this toxic nonsense.
Orlov's better.
And then the other thing about the series that I think at least gives me pause as someone who's picked the Penguins.
Oh, you picked the Penguins?
Besides the Malkin and Hagelin injuries. Hagelin probably more than Malkin. I bet Malkin plays game two. I think they sit Malkin for game one because they know that the Capitals
right.
are 8-2 in game one and it hasn't fucking mattered.
Well, yeah. And also, like, if you lose game one, you can still win the series. It's
right.
not like it's over, but...
Yeah, I mean they're 1-9 against the Penguins and 8-2 in Game One. So you tell me how important Game One is in the series.
I'm telling you,
but I think the more salient point for me is that, I mean, Holtby's never been terrible against the Penguins.
Oh, but
he's never been great.
He was terrible last year.
I don't know if he's been.
Terrible 2 years ago.
Terrible,
Matt Murray outplayed him.
Terrible
2 years ago.
To me is like walk of shame. Fucking can't start the guy. Like, he's not won the series. And I think when you say terrible, it's terrible in comparison to how he is in the rest of the playoffs and in normal life.
I think he's pretty terrible last year.
But he's played really well since he got back.
Yeah.
And
he's not running to the ground like he was the last 2 years. He's fresher.
I'm a little bit concerned about Matt Murray doing this without a safety net. I got to be honest with you a little bit. Like, if there was a Marc-Andre Fleury there, where if Murray has a shitty game three and the Caps are up 2-1, you go back to Fleury, that's the kick in the ass. That kind of – like, we've seen that movie before. I'm a little bit more confident in this pick, but I tend to believe he's going to be all right in this series.
I'm not worried about Matt Murray. I'm not worried. I mean, like, he could be the difference in terms of being crappy for sure because he had some not-so-great games against Philly. But, I mean, if the Penguins are still the Penguins that they used to be, you can put in Casey DeSmith or Tristan Jarry or whoever other
– No, you guy. Can't.
Remember
they tried to do that against the Rangers that 1 year?
They started the playoffs with – Jeff Zatkoff.
Right, they had to because of injuries
and then,
shit, right?
Then Matt Murray was like 975 over the last three games,
right.
And then the rest was history.
Yep.
And so this year, Matt Murray's had a bad regular season. He had a so-so series against the Flyers.
Yep.
It's all just setting up for the Caps, man. Like, you're right. If Matt Murray's bad in game one, if Matt Murray gets up four goals on 11 shots in game one, you're just like, uh-oh, what do we do?
I'm just trying to figure out where this all comes from.
They're just
like
due.
I know due. Where it comes from, this delusion that people say. Because you also picked the Flyers or the Penguins, didn't you?
I may have.
Yeah.
I may have.
So you're both a devotee of the idea that the Penguins are bad.
Not bad. They're running out of gas.
And even though they aren't. And then you're also one of these delusional people that's like, hey, it's got to happen at some time for the Capitals, even though it never does.
If the Flyers had any goaltending in that series, the Penguins probably don't win it. They were losing game six going to the third period. Right? They were down two goals in the third
period.
Yeah,
and then they said this, okay, we're going to win now. And then they just fucking took the game over.
Well, yeah, Ivan Provorov's out there with like half his body working, trying to make cross-ice passes in his own zone. It's different.
By the way, can we agree that the MCL is the most overrated CL in the world?
I know. Why does anybody need them?
Sean Couturier can do all that shit with a ripped up one. Come on, man.
Did you see the thing that thing on Twitter where the guy had the first penis transplant?
No, I did not.
I'm thinking what happened that somebody, I guess, donated their penis and balls. And
have you heard about this? A penis transplant.
Dog, true story. No, but if you're a hockey player, you should donate your MCLs to people that need them because apparently you don't.
You don't.
You don't need them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Sean Couturier had like the greatest series of all time, and he's got one knee.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's got to go up against Backstrom. And
MCU, greater than sign MCI, greater than sign MCL. Greater than sign. Oh, wait, no.
What are you doing?
MC.
You having a stroke?
MC equals E squared. Is that the relatively?
Not
no.
even close.
What is it?
Wow. Did you drink before you came in here today?
I did not. I wish I did.
E.
E equals MC squared.
There you go.
Right. That's what I said.
You said MC equals E squared.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same thing.
It's all.
I carried the squared. That's greater than sign MCU.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
And
oh,
that's
okay.
And that's greater than sign MCI.
I thought you were doing like no betterment, no sign.
And that's greater than sign MCL. MCL is the last of the MCs. Oh, wait. MCL greater than sign MC, a.k.a. MasterCard.
It would have to be your bowl.
And then greater than sign MC Hammer, who is greater than sign MC Light, who is greater than sign that MC on your calculator that I'm not quite sure what it does.
That's manufacturer calculations.
Oh, okay.
Sure. That's magnitude of control.
I picked the Penguins in seven because... Why not? I just don't. I think they're good enough to win with a diminished Malkin. I don't know if he misses the series if they can win.
He won't miss the series if he travels.
And there's a reason why the Capitals have never been past the second round with Alex Ovechkin on this team.
Oh, here we go.
It's not an Ovechkin thing. I'm just saying in this era with this core, with this group, they just can't do it. And the Penguins standing in their way is going to... Now, the other thing that I think sets up for the Capitals is all the bitching that Barry Trotz did earlier this season about, like, so unfair we get locked into a game against the Penguins, blah, 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 blah. Capitals would be playing the winner of the Leafs and Bruins series if it was an unbracketed play-the-seeding type situation, reseeding situation.
It's all the same at this point.
So wouldn't it be ironic if they finally get past the Penguins because they play them instead of playing either the Leafs or Bruins?
Caps would beat the Leafs. Caps probably wouldn't beat the Bruins.
We'll get to that series in a second.
But Caps, this is it, man.
Freewheeling Caps. I think the issue for me for the Caps is that even if you take Malkin out of the equation, the Penguins still have upwards of five guys that can win a series on their own. And win, or maybe,
five.
Maybe win a game on their own and then all kind of row together to win a series on their own. Sid, Phil, Murray, Gensel.
He's going to win a series on his own.
Dude, at this point, if you're like... He's counterfeit. Look at the fucking stats.
Yeah, I mean, how did he score that goal where Phil Kessel set him up on a 2-on-0? How does Jake Gensel do it?
Well, you know what?
How does he find it?
There's a lot of guys in these postseasons that don't score goals, and Jake Gensel does.
And they're usually not – those guys aren't playing with Phil Kessel and Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby.
And the last guy, of course, is Brian Dumoulin.
Dumoulin, baby. He's got two game winners in the series, for both for the Flyers, right? Or just the one game winner. The other one was just the goal.
Penguins in seven.
All right.
As the Capitals' pain continues – and they'll go at it again next year with Todd Reardon as their head coach.
Caps in five or six.
Five or six.
I don't want to get too crazy. Probably six.
So are the Caps now your pick to win the cup? Did you?
Oh, no. The Caps are going to lose to Tampa.
Oh, okay. Just be sure.
This is the thing they're going to do. They're going to finally get over the hump and then be so just like relieved. They're going to be like, oh, man, Tampa.
That's
four.
Okay, so you do subscribe to the... It's going to happen in some way, shape, or form. It's just a matter of how. So the Capitals are basically hockey's answer to Final Destination. Like, death is inevitable. We just have to figure out if it's someone falling into a plane turbine or someone accidentally dropping a toaster oven in the bathtub while they're in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's it going to be?
Like, right now, the Caps are out walking in the rain.
Right.
And the power lines are down.
Right.
But at the last second...
And the audience is like,
they're going to get shoved out of the way.
Right.
And into a car.
Into a car, right.
Driven by Steven Stamkos and John Cooper. But you'll still get out of the way of the power lines for the first time.
Right.
That's all that matters.
Exactly. As we do the show, Game 7 is tonight between the Leafs and Boston. If it's Leafs Lightning, what do you like?
Oh, Lightning either way.
Yeah, me too.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. They're rested up. Vasilevskiy looked good against the Devils. That alleviated one concern there. Kucherov was great in that series. Kucherov was better in that series than I thought he could be in a series, to be honest with you. Like offensively great, exerted himself physically with that hit on Vatanen. That was completely legal, of course, mm-hmm. and because every legal hit results in a concussion. And,
obviously.
Yeah, all that jive.
You know, his head didn't take the full force of it.
No.
But somehow a concussion managed to sleep in there through his helmet and everything.
But, you know, watching that Tampa team as much as they did as they knocked out my sweet beloved Devils, I was reminded that they have maybe, I don't want to say underrated, but maybe underappreciated amount of depth on that team. Like Palat.
Gord.
You know, Tyler Johnson can still, I mean, he's kind of runs hot and cold, but he could bring it.
Right. Yeah, nine forwards at the very least that'll destroy you at some point, and they'll destroy.
Mm-hmm. Home whatever. Ice, too, I think is good in that series.
They're rested. They're comfortable. Mm-hmm. They've been here before.
I don't know what's going to happen in game seven. I will say this.
Toronto 4, Boston 2 final.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that'd be prophetic actually happened.
Just want to get there.
I'm happy if the Leafs win because... You know, sure, Toronto could use some happiness and joy at this moment in history. And also, you know, the playoffs are, I think, more interesting if they advance against Tampa than mm-hmm. if Boston does.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy if they lose because this is absolutely the last fucking season that we can play the... It's an education process for the young stars on the Toronto. Oh, you know, fast forward to 2025. I really think Austin Matthews, after losing in the first round yet again, has learned a thing or two about what it takes to compete in the playoffs.
Gregory, you're forgetting that last year was not supposed to be a playoff year for the Leafs. This is supposed to be the first year in which they're supposed to do stuff.
You're saying that last year is like
last year's
bonus.
It's just gravy. It's just gravy before the mashed potatoes. Just
so you get,
gravy
you
on
get
the
gravy on like it's like an hors d'oeuvre of gravy.
Yeah,
and like a gravy puffin right. or something, a gravy cousin.
They're still gravy. It's a gookin, not a cousin. And then, like, they bring out the mashed potatoes this year, right. and then you mix them together, and maybe next year is when the year... Like, if they lose in the first round next year, then it's a problem.
But can't you feel it, though? Can't you feel it in the air? Can't you feel, like, all of a sudden the series are like, oh, the young Leafs, plucky as they are, learning a thing or two about playoff hockey. But Austin Matthews really needs to start scoring some fucking goals here, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's not
missing Nazem Kadri for 3 1/3
yeah,
games.
Yeah, it's getting there. The boys are going to bring a parade to Toronto at some point. This is the crew that we need with a great coach in Mike Babcock. But Austin Matthews needs to fucking score.
Here's why I think Boston winning is better. Because if the Leafs lose... I feel like that front office is still kind of calm enough to not do anything crazy. But
Boston or Toronto?
Toronto.
Okay.
But I think if they lose, and let's say they lose 5-1 tonight, and just Jake Gardner looks like ass again, and you know the back end's terrible, maybe they make a panic move. Maybe they go out and get Drew Doughty.
Error.
Eric Carlson.
All I will give you.
If they win, it's way harder to break things up and change the course. But if they lose in horrific fashion tonight, there's more of a chance of panic there than Boston.
I think the Doughty thing's interesting only because like I feel like there's going to be some level of clarification on his future. Because you figure they're going to come to him with a contract offer, the Kings, the summer.
Right.
Right. And they'll have a better idea if he's going to go to market or not.
Then if Drew Doughty stays there for another 7 years. Again, this whole thing where people don't want to move their shit. Like,
yeah.
Move your shit, man.
But your shit's in California. Like, your shit's got a fucking beach view. Yeah, right? That's the problem with that.
Yeah, but you can go to Toronto, man. Like,
and get a lake view.
Nothing wrong with Toronto. It's not like he's being like sent to like... which fan base will I piss off? It's not like you're being sent to...
No, but let's see. You've accomplished amazing things
Carolina.
With a franchise that wants to pay you for 8 years to live at the beach.
Yeah, that's
like it's either one of two things for Drew Doughty.
What have you done for
it's
me
go,
lately?
Go play for a fucking taskmaster in a city where they're going to tear you apart if you don't bring a cup there. Or
I don't think Doughty cares.
Be Joe Thornton. That's like, but Joe Thornton having already won twice.
I would rather – well, I don't know. Like if Matt Duchene would rather live in Ottawa than Denver – I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Drew would rather live in Toronto than L.A. for 6 or 7 years. It's not like he's not from Ontario. He played his junior right there.
There it is. There's the thanks, Don Cherry. The fucking manifest destiny of the Ontario player going back home to help them win. There's been exactly one person that's done that, and it's Mike Babcock. I'm not counting Marlowe.
Well,
no
so,
one was giving Marlowe that money in that contract.
Well, and also they've been so shitty for so long that nobody wants to go back and play for a shitty team. Now they're a team on the grow.
So you're saying that because Leafs grow, So you're saying that Austin Matthews is like the Connor McDavid effect, where people want to go play for the Leafs because they have good young talent.
Not even that.
Like someone's going to Luchich it up and go there, like, because
here's Toronto, way up here.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's LA.
Your hand is above your head. This is obviously
way
not television.
Down here.
LA is now on your thigh.
LA is.
You're rubbing your thigh.
LA is, ooh.
Very, very sensually to indicate that. Now you're feeling your own calf muscle.
My calf. That's not my
calf. Oh wait, your thigh muscle. Sorry. I don't really know.
You were boozing today, weren't you?
I wasn't boozing today. Not at all. We're doing the show inside of a toaster oven right now.
I do feel a little finished.
I feel like a shrinky dink.
I feel like Tuukka Rask after winning the cup. I'm just sitting in a sauna celebrating.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
You were talking about how Toronto was by your head and LA was on your thigh.
LA is on the way down, man. Like, that's a team that's going to get blown up. Why do you want to hang out there? Don't be loyal. Don't be loyal for shit that happened in the past. Go. You have a 15-year window to do awesome shit in your hockey career. Go do some awesome shit in Toronto.
But he's already done awesome shit.
You can do more awesome shit. You don't want to rest on your awesome shit laurels. You want to do more awesome shit. Unless Toronto wins tonight, then it doesn't matter. Then they probably won't go too crazy. Unless Tampa murders them in the second round. Oh,
we both think Tampa's going to advance.
Yeah.
And do we both think they're going to beat the Penguins or the Caps?
I think they'll beat the Caps. They play the Penguins. I'd like to reassess.
So just to be clear, if the Penguins make it past the Capitals, this Capitals juggernaut, then you'll believe that they are made of the stern stuff to potentially win another cup.
I mean, if you can beat the Caps in the second round, you can do anything. See, that's the other bullshit part of the whole Caps thing, too, is the last 2 years, that series has been for the cup. I can't prove it because the Caps always lose.
Right.
But
the team that emerged from that series won the cup.
That was a 1-2 matchup last year, the way Nashville-Winnipeg is this year. And people are going to, like, if Winnipeg loses, look back and, oh, remember Winnipeg couldn't get out of the second round? Yeah, they played the Predators because this league is stupid. No other sports league does this. No sports league is like, hey, congratulations, the Giants, you went 15-1 this year. Oh, who's the wild card team I get? Oh, the 14-2 Cowboys. They're in your division. Good luck.
The Nashville Predators, of course, the aforementioned President's Trophy winner, play the Winnipeg Jets in round two. Who you got in this series?
That's the Preds in seven.
I got the Preds in seven as well. I think that I kind of harken back to what we just saw with the Blue Jackets. It's like Blue Jackets should have won that series. But the problem is that they don't know how to close out a team. And I think Winnipeg is in a position that Nashville was in last year, which is the educational process of a potential Stanley Cup champion. You got to learn to crawl before you learn to walk.
Yeah.
And I feel like when it gets down to it, they're not going to be able to overcome Nashville. I think Nashville is going to be too good. And a game seven on home ice against Nashville is not a good proposition for the Jets. I like Nashville in seven.
And also, whoever wins that series is going to the Stanley Cup final. Not winning the cup for sure, but whatever team wins that is going to beat San Jose or Vegas.
I tend to believe so.
So, you know, Winnipeg might be that team that, like, I can't remember the last team that went from not making the playoffs to winning 16 on their first trip, but it hasn't happened in a really long time. But if Winnipeg plays Pittsburgh or Tampa in the final, that's going to be anticlimactic,
now,
I think.
What's the over-under on the number of complaints from Winnipeg fans that Nashville's getting all the calls because they're the league's new darling?
What? Nashville is?
I guarantee fucking to you,
the
man.
Team that had game six stolen from it by an early whistle?
Are you
kidding me?
I guarantee you that is going to happen in this series. That the longer Winnipeg goes in these playoffs.
Look at the mayor's Twitter page.
I know. I had my laptop open on the ground, and Lozo just looked at the mayor of Las Vegas.
I need that. Sorry.
I think the longer they go in the playoffs, the more there's going to be complaints about the officiating being skewed against Winnipeg because no one wants the Jets to win or whatever.
I don't really care.
Okay.
That's why the mute button exists on Twitter, so you don't have to see that stuff.
Winnipeg-San Jose would be awesome because it's the Evander Kane series.
The Wi-Fi series.
And the Wi-Fi series.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Yeah. It is setting up for that, isn't it?
It's going to be the Wi-Fi series.
We've already had the precursor, the Wi-Fi and Evander Kane trades. It's obviously going to be Jets-Sharks now that I think about it.
And you're going to have the Jets and the Sharks.
Didn't even think about it. Oh, God. There's three things now. I still think it's going to be Nashville, though.
Nashville in seven. Maybe five.
Kyle Turris has... no even strength points in six games for the Predators.
He doesn't?
Nope.
Didn't he get one the last game? Oh, yeah. It was waved off the goal. That's
That's kind of a crazy thing. What's happening for them, though, that's kind of interesting, is that Nick Bonino now has yet another, like, super hot playoff line with Sissons and Watson, I think, are on that line.
Yeah,
and
Watson
they're, like,
has
killing
it. Watson has, like, 7 points in six games
in six
or something.
Games, yeah.
Also, Rick Nash, by the way, has 1 point in six games.
Yeah, we glossed over that. Yeah.
That's my favorite.
I had somebody come at me again on Twitter about, like, oh, but look at his shot attempts. His Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, dude, honestly,
who cares?
I really appreciate people recycling. You know, I think it's good for the environment. But this is the same fucking thing every year.
Every year.
Every year. It's unbelievable. It's inexplicable how – because he does get chances. Like, he puts shots on goal. They just don't go in.
Right. It's funny how, like there's a time sometimes when in a game where some dude keeps getting all the chances, but it's like Matt Martin.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, God, why couldn't that be so-and-so? Except, like, Rick Nash isn't Matt Martin.
Right.
He should be getting four chances a game and putting one in the net.
In the playoffs, he is.
Yeah.
No, it's funny. It's like – I was thinking about this earlier. It's almost like the universe has to stay in balance. So for every player who was – remember how like Danny Briere was like a point per game player in the playoffs but not that in the regular season? Like for every player that elevates their game to that degree, there needs to be one guy who gets knocked down to keep the universe in balance, even Steven.
I don't know how he does it, man. And the one goal he had too I think was like a A-Rod blowout home run type goal. It was in game one for sure. It might have put him up three, so it might have been an okay goal, but that's – I just don't know.
Are you a Yankee fan? I forget.
Oh, fuck you. How dare you, sir?
Okay, but you understand the Yankees.
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Deeply.
So, Gregorius. Was it Gregorius?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. No, I was laughing.
You laughed because it made me think that I don't give a shit about the Yankees.
Well, you saw the thing yesterday with him, right?
What's that?
The Yankees are having like a bat day for him. And on like, you know, how like behind home plate, there's ads for it or whatever. The Yankees had his name spelled wrong.
Oh, really? Oh, Jesus. To me, this guy seems like he's going to end up being a better player than Jeter.
He already is.
But, like, will they ever acknowledge that?
No, of course not.
They all have to make pretend that Jeter's, like, the best player of all time.
Right. Like, if Corey Schneider would have won, like, two cups in his first 3 years of the Devils, no one would have been like, hey, maybe he's better than Marty. They would have just been like, well, Marty played in a different era, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Winning, blah.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's he's been pretty much better. Like, Jeter had some years, obviously. He hung around long enough for 3,000 hits, but... Like, towards the end, Jeter was an absolute black hole on the team. And, like the second Gregorius got there, he's been,
like,
fantastic.
Austin Matthews is going to score, like, 50 goals a season in perpetuity, but they're still going to be people like, oh, but he's not Dougie Gilmore. Dougie Gilmore was a killer. He had art.
Wendell Clark, he can go out there and he can play as tough as anybody. That's why he won. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah, I feel like this guy's going to have, like, incredible stats and be incredible and be the best player in the league and whatever, and then people are going to just be like... But he wasn't a fucking captain like Jeter.
Yeah, he didn't happen to play on a super loaded team that spent twice as much as the next closest
team. The thing
team
that Jeter was clutch.
Yeah,
he was clutch.
Real clutch.
He got hot.
It's always great to hit in front of really good hitters. Yeah. Nobody wants to pitch to them.
By the way,
you hit 280-foot home runs down
after going there this past weekend again, I will say this about Yankee Stadium. Uh-oh. It is so inferior to Citi Field. Like, the Mets are never going to be the Yankees, but I can say with some fucking certainty that our stadium is better than theirs.
Not by a lot, but it is. It's not terrible. The old Yankee Stadium, like...
was a palace.
There are parts of Manhattan in the summer that smell like piss, right? Like, you're in a certain subway station, and you're just like, wow, somebody was really pissing down here. Yeah. That was Yankee Stadium every time you went before the new one. It was always... And Shea smelled like piss, too. Any old building in Manhattan or New York smells like piss.
Right.
But the new city...
I mean, luckily, the asbestos smell at Nassau Coliseum always covered up the piss, which was a nice... A nice part of it.
It was a nice little cocktail for the nostrils.
I always liked that Yankee Stadium. Like, for whatever reason, in the old Yankee Stadium, you'd sit in the upper deck, and there was always something burning out in the distance. Like, there's always, like, this weird black smoke.
you'd be, like, watching the game at home, and, like, somebody would hit, like, a high home run the right, and then, like, off to the side, there's, like, a smoke thing happening, and you're just like...
Shea Stadium, you're worried about a plane falling out of the sky. At Yankee Stadium, there's just, like, this weird fire always burning in the distance.
They were both dumps. They were such dumps. If anyone's never been to them and you feel like you missed out, you did not. Trust me on this. But the Yankee Stadium, I don't get why they built it to look like the old one exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, the Mets were like, let's do something new and fun. And the Yankees were like, tradition, same everything, terrible food. Food's fine. It's okay.
Better at City.
Yeah.
Is it good for hockey if Winnipeg wins this series? Or is it better for hockey if Nashville continues to establish itself as a glamour franchise?
I don't even know what that means. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if anybody... Like,
I just hit you with the classic, don't you think that it would be better for hockey if McDavid went to the Rangers?
Right. But, like... Wasn't who put out the thing? Was it like Sports Business Journal?
Oh, the ratings
dude?
Thing.
Dude, yeah, like Winnipeg. Yeah. Didn't Winnipeg have the lowest? Or were they in the highest section? I forget. Wait, here, I mean,
the Nashville made a huge jump. The Devils jumped. The L.A. Kings had the lowest.
Yeah, but like, they were all percentages. They were all percentages though. Like, the Devils had like a 50% increase. So does that mean it went from like four guys watching to eight? Like,
yeah, pretty
or
much.
Six, whatever it would be. like I needed actual numbers. I was looking through that tweet for like some information. You talk off.
Yeah, the Kings had a giant decrease. The Rangers had a giant decrease. Chicago had a giant decrease, which is kind of disconcerting. That's a place where I'm really wondering if they – like what's going to happen if they spend a few years in the wilderness. Like is that bandwagon going to thin out? Is it going to be one of those situations? Or are these guys – are the folks that have been attracted to the Blackhawks now dyed-in-the-wool Blackhawks fans? Are they going to stick around if this team sucks for a while?
Oh, no. They'll fucking bail.
You got the ratings there? What was
it? Yeah, Winnipeg isn't in either of them.
But, all right, Mikey.
Dog. Lowest ratings. Kings. Islanders. Coyotes. Panthers. Is that Florida? Florida Panthers.
I can't. Ducks. Islanders games are almost unwatchable when you're in the arena. It's hard enough. Why would you watch them on TV?
Well, the Islanders had the lowest overall. Those are the lowest overall ratings. The biggest decline was Philly, Buffalo. Like, eventually, people in Buffalo are finally like, what are we doing?
Yeah, great.
Why are we supporting this?
But the national ratings in Buffalo are always insane. Like, it's incredible how much they watch hockey in that town.
But, like, it's the original six cities. Detroit, Chicago, and the Rangers had the three biggest declines. The biggest gains were Nashville. The dude who took the screenshot covered up the number two team with, like, a little pop-up thing that comes up when you scroll over something, so I don't know what it is.
The real pro.
And then it's Colorado Devils. So the Islanders had the biggest gain, and yet they were still the second least watched team. Highest Buffalo's the highest, but people are bailing, man.
Here's the thing. Don't watch games on TV. Hockey's unwatchable on TV. We all know that. It's hard to find the puck. They should make it glow.
Oh, my God.
You can't see all the players all the time. Oh, it's one big swing and dick camera back and forth. It's the most boring sport to watch on TV. That's why you need to get in the arena. And there's only one way to get in the arena, my friend. With SeatGeek! Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek, the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best deals at the best prices, and it's all fully guaranteed. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. How the hell do you think I went to that Yankee game? Saw them against the Blue Jays, and the seats we got were baller good. Were there people sitting in them when we got there? Of course, because it was, of course, the bottom of the first inning. And everyone knows if you're not in your seats at the bottom of the first inning, you could just sit wherever you want.
That's
because
how it
why
is.
Would people show up?
And one of the beauties of the SeatGeek app is if someone's sitting in your seats, you can commit murder.
Right. It's like the
you
purge.
You can choke them out. Yeah.
That's, it's the rules. It's the best.
It's on the back of the ticket.
So with a few taps, I instantly found those seats. They were great. And because of SeatGeek, I knew that we were getting a really good deal. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time. They save you money by searching multiple ticket sites, compare prices, and find amazing deals. And you get the most bang for your buck, especially if you use a gun to murder the people that are in your seats when you're walking in with your $20 helmet of nachos, as we had.
Wait, is bang for your buck, is that a hunting term, do you think? Like if you're out shooting bucks? Like,
oh, no. I imagine it's about whoring. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget, plus every purchase is fully guaranteed. Best of all, as you guys know, listeners to Puck Soup get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, that spells soup, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And again, as we always say, much appreciated to the people that send their SeatGeek photographs to us on Twitter if you use the app to buy tickets. We do appreciate it, and I think our friends at SeatGeek do appreciate it too. Because
they must.
Unlike those fly-by-night Johnny Come Lately advertisers, those podcasts, SeatGeek remains in the game every week.
Loyal, they know what's up here.
Yeah,
they're all big fans of tickets and Sweet Golden Night songs.
And unlike ZipRecruiter, we know what SeatGeek is.
ZipRecruiter.
All right,
you want to do your ZipRecruiter bit now?
Before we get to the Vegas Golden Knights and the San Jose Sharks. We probably should talk about the giant gray-haired elephant in the room sipping a Diet Coke, the return of Mike Francesa to New York radio.
The Jay Leno of sports, retired, gave someone my time slot, coming back hard.
For those who don't have been following this because you honestly don't give a shit about New York radio, Mike Francesa is going back to WFAN in the afternoon, replacing a show with Chris...
I don't even know.
Carlin, was it?
No, he's
or
in prison.
Or Carton.
He's in prison, isn't he? Isn't he the guy that went...
Craig Carton in prison. Chris Carlin.
Oh.
Bart Scott.
That's two different guys.
Yeah. And then Maggie Gray, who used to be at SI.
Oh, yeah. Those are they've had that slot for just like...
They've had
months.
That slot for like 15 minutes. They lost the ratings book to Michael Kay. The best part about this Mike Francesa story, if you've not heard it, is apparently someone has found out that the name Mike Francesa doesn't really travel all that out far outside of New York City. So when you're like thinking you're king shit and you're like, you know, going to start a podcasting network and like you find out no one gives a shit about you, you're like, going to go back to WFAN.
I'm going to do my thing here.
Yeah. But the best part about it is at least the way the story has been framed was like Frances is like, oh, I like retire. I'm going to go do my own thing. And then someone's like, you know, they're like, you're not welcome back here at WFAN. And then Frances is like, I'm going to come back to WFAN.
Wait,
now.
Wait, who said he wasn't welcome back?
We don't know. But that was the story was that
so
somebody,
he's coming back out of spite?
Somebody at WFAN was like, you're not welcome back here. You're done. And he's like, I'm coming back.
How old is he?
He just took his fucking thing back.
He's got to be like a 70-year-old man at this point, right? Like or in the 60s. But like whatever he is, like he's made a shit ton of money. Assume he's got a nice house out on Long Island there with what's his wife's name again? Flo.
Sure.
But again,
like, you know, like you mentioned out. The Jay Leno of sports talk radio, like there's a certain amount of that, but there's also a certain amount of like if you're FAN management, how do you possibly like look any of the talent in the face and be like, yeah, we've got your back.
I know.
You know,
like this time slot went to one guy for like 3 decades. You got to give some people time to come to it. 3 months.
I feel
insane.
Like for any show. Like any new show whatsoever in the sports genre, you got to give
period. You got to give it time.
You not only have to give it time, but like here's the thing: if you've got Bart Scott on your show, and you don't allow that show at least a football season,
yeah,
like what the fuck are you doing? Like no one's listening to Bart Scott for like his takes on fucking Matt Harvey. You're listening to Bart Scott for his takes on the Giants and the Jets. So the closer you get to football season, the more it's going to be relevant.
Yeah,
you know,
it's pretty obvious stuff. But if you feel like you're station's going to go out of business. Like I want to know what dollar amount it took. Like, right. What was the dollar amount where Francesca was like, don't talk to me till you get to four.
Right.
Four and a half.
Right.
Or what the, all right, here, take it.
But as I said on Twitter, like, the reality of it is that.
Chris Russo got a job.
He did. The reality of it is that Mike Francesca looked into podcasting, probably saw the numbers, and then also saw that he'd have to do ZipRecruiter ads.
Before we get back to the Al Albuquerque conversation, I just want to talk to you a little bit about Health IQ. I love to wake up in the morning and walk with Flo. I forget his name. His wife has like a good New York accent name. I forget what it is, but he says it all the time on the show. So, you know, you get out there, you get healthy, and what is this? Health IQ? Is this real? What is this?
I'll help you out, Mikey. ZipRecruiter.com. If you've got to find a zipper for your pants, go to ZipRecruiter. They're going to find that zipper for your lickety split. Wait, what? Oh, okay. ZipRecruiter.com will find someone to sing Zippity-Doo-Dah for you for your child's birthday if they're a huge fan of the Disney Song of the South. Wait, what? No?
Great,
okay.
Great.
Dog,
I remember Disney 1944 watching that Donald Duck there in his towel. Shaking his tail feathers. Enormously talented duck. Speaking of enormously talented ducks, if you want to go see the Ducks play hockey, SeatGeek's the only way to do it.
I can't think of an enormously talented Oregon Duck. Who's an Oregon Duck alumna?
Marcus Mariota.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. Ah, oh, shit. That was where I should have gone. The only person I could think of was Gary Payton, but he went to Oregon State.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I get my Oregon State guys mixed up.
Like he was a Beaver.
Steven Jackson.
They're the Beavers,
was an
right?
Oregon State guy. Yeah, he's Beavers and Ducks.
Yeah.
Mortal enemies in the wild. Mortal enemies inside the boundaries of Oregon State. Beavers. Ducks. Next.
Beavers.
Oh, my. Chewing wood.
You won't want a duck out of this one. A nice beaver coming up next on NBC.
Boop.
What did we do? What did we do in life to deserve having Mike Milbury and Pierre Maguire on certain broadcasts?
Pierre's on a broadcast today, the entire first round. Like, you can't get away. He's between Boston and Toronto and Pittsburgh and Philly. Just every other day he's there.
I wrote a story about the Minnesota Wild's GM opening and included Pierre Maguire in it, and that also got picked up by the Athletic somehow, that he might be up for the job. But no one understands that when I put Pierre's name in these stories about GM openings, it's just because I don't want him to be on TV anymore.
Oh, that's it.
I don't even know if he even has met fucking Craig Leopold. I don't even give a shit. His name's in the story to maybe like Craig Leopold looks at it and he's like, oh, that's a really good idea. I should totally hire Pierre Maguire. And then he won't be on my TV anymore. That's the whole point of it.
We have to get like political writers did the same thing whenever there's like a cabinet opening or some position opening. Hey, how about Pierre for director of Homeland Security?
My whole bit is that I'm hoping that I'm like Fox News to like Craig Leopold in Minnesota, where like he's watching, he's reading ESPN, and he's like,
Pam McGuire, he's going to be great as my new general manager. Sad.
I wouldn't mind. Like, I hate Pierre, but I don't understand why we need a third person in the booth ever.
You mean third person? No, I mean, he's behind the glass.
Whatever, just on the broadcast.
Whatever the fuck. Inside the bench. He's in the zone of
Doc and Mike, these guys are really talking on the bench. Yeah, they're human beings sitting in close proximity to each other and their teammates. It's not a surprise that they're fucking talking, Pierre.
I was talking to somebody the other day who was a unabashed Pierre McGuire hater. Okay,
so who's any living being that you encounter anywhere?
It was the Dalai Lama. No, it was somebody who's in the industry who fucking hates Pierre, and he told me there was a situation once in a game where it was like 2 minutes left. Game was absolutely brutal, fucking awesome game, like tie score, mm-hmm. tightly played playoff game. Mm-hmm. Two guys collide in this massive body check that sends the crowd into hysterics, and it's like the culmination of all of the emotion of the game. It's a perfect moment. You could hear Doc Emmerich's voice being like, "And he gets nailed at center ice with a huge hit." Blah, 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 blah.
The bells go off and go crazy.
And the guy told me that, like, as soon as Emmerich gets done with this incredible call about this massive hit, and the crowd's going berserk. You hear all of a sudden, Doc and Eddie, the best part about that hit is that they have the same trainer. You're like, no, come
Wait,
on.
Now I'm going to go look that up on Twitter to find that. I'm going to find all the keywords.
So that was the thing.
Hit. I'm going to search hit Pierre and trainer.
But yeah, that's why. I mean, listen, there's only been one job that Pierre has been close to getting, and that was the Penguins job before they hired Rutherford. I've lobbied for him to get the Ottawa Senators jobs. I now lobby for him to get the Minnesota Wild job. It is when you read that in a story, it is not from any point of inside information or anything other than my unending desire to shake it, to shut the fuck up and get him off my television.
It's a public service you're doing.
The difference between you and I is that I just want him out of the benches. I've long said that I think he'd be perfect for the intermission show.
Eddie O has been good. I like Eddie Owens
on the intermission show.
In the booth, yeah, mm-hmm. or in the studio.
Yeah, he's been really good because he's not Roenick or Milbury.
He's not perfect. Like, he made some point about like a breakout pass that proved that one team wasn't nervous or something. It was kind of dumb, but like right. for the most part, like he's way better. His observations are better than anybody
else. I think
else.
Pierre, like, not being overexcited and a sharer of constant trivia in an intermission show would be great. I just don't like him in that role. And unfortunately, NBC loves him in that role because they feel like he invented that role and they helped him invent that role. Like, that's one of the reasons why they've done this for years, is because they like him and they believe that they invented the in-between benches thing. And they keep him out there.
They kind of invented it. Mm-hmm. Nobody was doing it before they were. It's a good idea for sure. But like, what matters is what you're reporting on when you're down there. Like, benches communicating. I don't care.
Yeah, I believe it was a very wise man who once said, "Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should."
You didn't think? No, it's if you could. Wait, are we talking about the movie with Eddie Murphy where he's...
No, you're talking about Jurassic Park.
Oh, I thought we were doing the movie where he works for the Home Shopping Network.
Are you talking about Holy Man?
Holy Man.
Holy shit!
It's been on like nonstop lately.
What?
Any movie I reference on here has been on HBO nonstop the week before I came in here.
Right.
Holy Man's been on. Kelly Preston. I love Kelly Preston. She's great.
HBO is like your Fox News. He came in ranting about Wonder Woman that one day. And like, fucking...
What's the deal with this Jim Belushi K-9 sequel that's always on called K-911? Who greenlit that? Am I right, people? That has been on a lot lately, too.
K-911?
It's called K-911, and it has...
So, but it could also be K-92. Holy shit!
But, like, I thought K-911 was the original K-9. I just forgot. But, no, they made a sequel to that.
No, they made a sequel.
No sequel to The Nice Guys. No. A sequel to a movie where Jim Belushi's mm-hmm. got a dog.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the dog didn't die like in Turner and Hooch. Could be a sequel. Spoiler. Could be a sequel of that. I think Hooch died.
Well, Hooch dies, but his girlfriend has a bunch of kids or whatever.
Remember
there's like a bunch of puppies at the end?
Wait, whose girlfriend? Tom Hanks' girlfriend has pup... Wait.
No, Turner...
Hooch's dog has puppies.
Hooch... Tom Hanks hooks up with the veterinarian lady.
Right.
And she's got like a little froofy dog mm-hmm. and Hooch is all like sloppy and whatever. But right. they find love. They have sex. They have kids. And after he dies...
The dogs do.
The dogs. Oh, right. I think and the humans.
And the humans do as well.
The dogs are much like mm-hmm. their owners.
Now, which of those dogs is voiced by Danny DeVito?
Well, no, he voices a cat in Last Action Hero.
So the Look Who's Talking franchise said, all right, Bruce Willis is a sassy baby, money in the bank. What are we going to do for the next one? Give him a sister, voiced by Roseanne Barr. Great idea.
Was that huge, the sequel?
Huge. Look Who's Talking 2. Great idea. Awesome idea. Like, now there's a little girl that has a sassy voice. What do we do for the third one? Should we have another baby? No. Let's have talking animals. That was the thing. Remember that? It was Diane Keaton and Danny DeVito as, like, two dogs, along with talking babies.
The sequels, because, like, those sequels mess me up because it's, like, two, but it's, like, also
right.
two.
Like, oh, should we do a fourth one? Yeah, why not? Yeah, it's Hugh Grant as a fork. We're just going to have now talking everything.
Please don't use me to stick me in this pudding here. I,
wow,
yeah,
that
was Hugh Grant as a fork.
Oh right.
I don't know.
It's too hot. Just
keep me in the drawer. Keep me in the drawer is what I'm saying.
Oh, it looks like I'm spooning, and then and the spoon's voice is like Elizabeth Hurley, and she's like, "Oh, get right out of here."
Robbie Coltrane as a knife.
Slice it up, I will.
Well, no.
Harry?
Robbie Coltrane's fat, so they would make him like a ladle. Right? Because that's how they cast stuff.
So we need somebody who's tall.
Right.
I mean, Stephen Merchant doesn't fit the timeline, though. He's too... I mean, he fits the... Oh, Richard E. Grant would be the perfect knife.
Mm-hmm. You'd be the knife. And like a mop would have like yellow stuff, so they have to get like a blonde lady to play the mop's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Be like... it was a blonde, short hair blonde lady. Scarlett Johansson?
No, she's not blonde. Like, Lori Petty at the time would be somebody that would be like...
Oh, these have to be like 90s.
It has to be time... The fourth Look Who's Talking film would have put us into maybe like 90... What, like 94, 96, somewhere? Like maybe a little bit sooner than that?
Oh, it could be the right fielder in A League of Her Own who can't hit the cutoff man. What's her name?
Is that Lori Petty?
No, she's the pitcher, obviously. Okay. Obviously. Kit Keller. What else is the outfielder's name? But she was.
You know, League of Their Own way more
she was,
than I
she,
do.
She's been in a million things, but she was like the sidekick lady on Monk. Her. She's got the blonde hair. She could be the talking mop.
Right. The sidekick lady on Monk. Totally. Right. Lori Petty.
Who would be the microwave? Vinnie Johnson, the microwave. He'd be like, hey, I'm the microwave. That's get
some
it?
Amazing stunt casting.
Get it? Yeah. I don't think he has like a distinct voice, but he just the whole time he'd just be like, "Hey, I'm the microwave,"
and then Eddie Izzard as the olive spoon, it's really snotty, kind of like, "Cause all you wankers, you're all very common, and I'm the olive spoon." So,
good stuff.
So a good British podcast. Cast Look Who's Talking sequel where it's kitchen utensils,
and it's all you know where it's set.
Where?
Leicester City. Home of the fighting Leicesters.
The Vegas Golden Knights and the San Jose Sharks are going to play in a series, and you are picking the... Oh, shit. Have you not made a pick in this series?
I mean, I have, but I'm
picking the Sharks in six. And for two reasons. One...
You're jumping off the bandwagon.
I jumped off before the season, but again, then jump back on now. No matter what happens, it's fine, because if Vegas loses, then I'm smart, and if Vegas wins, then I'm going to fucking Vegas for the conference final. Here's the thing. I've been saying for months that I thought Vegas was going to win the first round. You know this. I've said this in this podcast before. Many people are saying.
Yes.
I've always said that in the second round, it's going to get way too real. Like, they're going to be 12 wins away from winning a cup, and now it's going to be in their heads. The house money's all dried up. Now they're thinking about it. Now fucking, you know, like fucking James Neal's like, I might not get another crack at this kind of thing, and then he'll start thinking. So I'm...
But of all the teams that have it be too much for against, San Jose is going to be the one that overcomes it?
San Jose is, on the other reason I'm picking them, I feel like they're what people thought Vegas was in the first round. Like the veteran team that's been there before that's going to be able to shut down the Marchessault line and all that other shit. I feel like they're going to be – they're just going to be able to eke it out. It's going to be a real tight series. And I also think that it's healthy. We talked about this previously. Like I feel like it's healthy for Vegas to not win all this much this early. Like feel a little pain. It's going to make you a better fan if you feel a little pain right now if you're Vegas. So San Jose in six for the betterment of the Vegas Golden Knights franchise.
Vegas in seven in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
With the game-winning goal by Ryan Carpenter.
the Ryan? Former shark.
Is that his name, Ryan? I keep calling him Bobby because I'm old and that's the carpenter I go to.
It's Amanda Carpenter.
Amanda Carpenter? Who's that?
That was Bobby's daughter that got left off the...
I don't know. That.
Anyways, so you said... Okay, so the former shark, who was wavered over to the Vegas Golden Knights, is going to score the winning goal.
He ties it at the end of regulation, and then Eric Halla wins it in overtime.
Oh, I like Eric Halla as a call. Mm-hmm. You would win the Bucci overtime challenge, I think, if you picked Eric Halla in that
game. This is the Lozo overly specific overtime challenge. Okay. I'm telling you how to get to overtime first and then.
So you don't
overtime.
Want the tank top that Bucci gives you for winning the Bucci overtime challenge? You're a man, it seems like a tank top or two.
Ugh. It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird that the guy who doesn't wear a shirt's giving away shirts.
I recuse myself. Okay, so Sharks in six, and you say Vegas in seven. Vegas plays seven. Nashville, we both agree. So Vegas beats Nashville or lose Nashville?
Nashville in two. That's where the pain comes. That's where it happens. San Jose and Vegas is a really even matchup. Nashville and Winnipeg is a really even matchup, but Nashville and Vegas will be bad.
So there you go. So here's your second round preview. Don't ever say that we don't talk about hockey in between conversations about the Mission Impossible franchise and Talking Forks. Speaking of Talking Forks, you know what you use a fork for? Eating. You know how you eat? With food. You know what the best food is?
Is this mansplaining that you're doing right now?
The stuff that you get from Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country being the United States, and is on a mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. I don't know if there is like a box food thing in Canada, and I think about
it. You can't get Blue Apron in Canada?
Blue Apron in Canada is BLEU. Yeah.
And it's just Arpan Basu. It's Blue Arpan, and he just makes stuff for you. We'll send Arpan right to your place to make up some poutine.
It's just a box of uncooked fries and then packets of gravy. It's the blue apron in Canada.
Blue Arpan. Yeah, he's in Montreal. Blue Arpan. Bonjour.
I didn't make that connection at first, but that is the funniest shit.
Blue Arpan. Je m'appelle Arpan. Vous avez un poutine?
Oh, that's very good. I don't even know if that's for real. So Blue Apron delivers fresh, non-GMO, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes or around 55 minutes if you don't have any knife skills like me. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what best fits their schedule. Now, here's the deal. From April 16th, which is already passed, through May 21st, which is yet to come, Blue Apron is teaming with Airbnb to bring you the best home cooking from around the world. So each week, their menu will feature a recipe developed in collaboration with an Airbnb experiences host like Cece, a chef from Shanghai who makes incredible Kung Pao chicken.
Ooh.
So it's a good little variety of different recipes.
Yes.
I like making Blue Apron, like I've talked about, because I don't like going to the supermarket and buying a bunch of stuff I never even use or these meals. And with Blue Apron, they give you everything you need and you don't have anything extra lying around.
It's the beauty of delivery without the hassle of going out
and with
buying
and with
stuff to cook with.
Right, the calming sensation together of cooking. I mean, for the most part. So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free at blueapron.com/pucksoup. That's blueapron.com/pucksoup, all one word, to get 3 free meals. Your first 3 meals free. Blue Apron. Blue Apron.
Blue Apron.
A better way to cook.
.ca. I love your screensaver on what I assume is your work computer. It's just a bunch of like ESPN people.
It's all a bunch of ESPN people, and I don't know how the screensaver works, because occasionally it'll be the promotional picture of me and Emily back to back for the podcast, and like people will see it and they'll like email me. I'm like, I just saw you on my screensaver. I'm like, eh.
Oh, because everybody has it. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Everybody has it, right?
Yeah, that's great.
Ever since I started working at ESPN, I've been extraordinarily careful about anything I've ever done on my work computer, by the way. Like
No porn at all, huh?
I mean, no, not even like Maxim. Like I'm not even going anywhere near a site that would be like
Maxim.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm using all my home bomb making recipes are on my phone. Like I just don't even I'm not even messing around.
That's one of my favorite parts of Ocean's 13 where Matt Damon's trying to talk everybody into letting him go after Ellen Barkin, and he says something like, I read it in Maxim. And meanwhile, like, Maxim hadn't been cool for like 15 years at that point. I feel like that script was kind of sitting around since like 99.
Maxim still resurfaces in my like feed occasionally when it's like...
It exists.
It exists.
The Super Troopers guys went to Maxim after they talked to us on Friday. They said they were going over to Maxim, so it has to still be a thing.
Remember how weird it was that Cracked.com was like a huge website for a really long time and people went to it, and all I could remember about Cracked was that it was the shitty version of Mad Magazine growing up?
Oh.
Remember that?
I don't know if I ever went to the website.
Yeah.
But I remember, yeah.
There would be like these, like, you'd find these, like, these stories that would like go viral, and it was like the 50,
yes,
the 50 worst jokes in Eddie Murphy movies or whatever, and it'd be on Cracked.com, and it's like, wait a second.
Right.
It's like finding out that there's like an amazing GoBots movie. It's like,
oh my god! Speaking of that, did you know that Dave Franco used to be on like apparently a season of Scrubs?
I did not know that.
I going through my channels this morning. It's like an episode of Scrubs where like John C. McGinley is in there, and I'm like, there's no one else around that I recognize, and like, there's Dave Franco.
Did he replace Braff? Braff?
I think it was all post like Braff and all those people. But Turk was on the show still. So
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I feel like I woke up and like saw like a parallel universe version of Scrubs where Dave Franco was the Zach Braff. I think Dave Franco might have died on the episode. He had
at the end of the day, is Dave Franco going to be bigger than James Franco?
No,
probably not.
Nah.
James Franco's already accomplished so much as an artist.
Yeah, James Franco's already got a Oscar nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Franco's fine.
He's fine.
He'll get you where you want to go.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was good. He was good in
Neighbors. What,
Neighbors? Was he also 21 Jump Street?
Yeah, he was a drug dealer.
He was a drug dealer. Yeah, he was really funny.
Yeah, he's good. He's solid.
Solid.
You want him for the comedy, I think. Well, actually, I don't know. Yeah.
Since we last did a show, the Calgary Flames announced that Bill Peters is officially their head coach.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
They are aiming to fix all their problems by hiring a guy who's never been in the playoffs.
The sport, man. The sport. This sport. Like, it's one thing where, like, you give Glenn Gullitzen another chance after he'd been out for a while and it doesn't work out. Like, what is, again, I know everyone goes to the underlying numbers with Bill Peters, but Jesus, like, what's the right, like you said on Twitter, like, it was pretty clear that Bill Peters had this thing lined up for a while.
The two greatest things about this press conference were one, Bill Peters and Brad Treliving were wearing the same fucking outfit. Like, they were working in the same Best Buy.
And nobody asked them about it.
And no one asked them about it. Where is the Calgary media to ask why they're dressed the same?
Somebody has to go, look, I know this isn't the most important thing, but did you guys plan the, you know, like, you have to. Like, someone has to raise their hand and do that.
Greg Wyshynski, Calgary Herald. Bill, are you trying to single white female the general manager of your new team?
Wait, we have referenced like 41 movies from like 1997 today.
Well, the thing is that while you get all of your material for the show from HBO, I watch the Encore Network and Look Who's Talking Now, Single White Female, all of very heavy rotation on Encore.
Silence of the Lambs has been on. So Silence of the Lambs is still a really good movie. It's kind of old, but I realized something really dumb because that's been on nonstop. So Jodie Foster plays this intuitive genius person in the FBI.
Clary Starling.
Right. They bring her out of the school or the training thing before she graduates.
The FBI Academy.
The Academy. To work with this dangerous lunatic to find a serial killer.
Dr. Lecter.
She finds the killer. She does all this stuff pretty much on her own.
Buffalo Bill
are fucking up.
Bob? Bill?
Buffalo Bill.
James Gum.
Yeah. And at the end of the movie, when he calls her from Cuba, when he's already gotten escaped.
I'm having an old friend for dinner.
Yes. She's standing there on the phone. It's her graduation party. And like,
that's right.
He hangs up the phone.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
And for like 11 minutes, she goes, Dr. Lecter. Dr. Lecter.
He hangs up the phone. Or no, I think he just walks away from the phone, right? Because
No, he puts it down. It's an old-timey 1990s phone where you hear the click. And she's this genius and can't figure out for an app.
Right.
Dr. Lecter.
Dr. Lecter.
Dr. Lecter. Dr. Lecter.
And then, like, the camera's, like, panning away.
It's falling away from her. Like, she says it, like, four or five times.
Yeah.
Like, you idiot, he hung up. Go back to your party.
But I hate that part.
Dr. Lecter.
But goddamn, that movie's so good.
Dr. Lecter. The part two where she first goes to visit him and like the guy throws the jizz on her, I didn't understand what happened in that scene until I was like older because I didn't understand what happened.
That multiple Migs threw his cum on her?
He threw – you can't – no one's that accurate. Eli Manning can't throw a football 7 yards. This guy's throwing jizz through prison cell bars from 15
feet
away.
Are you saying
away?
No one's that accurate if he just like jizzed on – like
that's what I thought he did for the longest time. I was like, wow.
No,
wait,
he put it in his hand and curled it.
I know that. But like, that's as ridiculous as timing your orgasm for the moment she – so he's just holding it like waiting for her to walk by and then he throws it perfectly. Perfect. There's no way.
I just like that. At some point in your life, you thought it was like he had a like his dick was a t-shirt cannon.
Right,
he just timed it.
That's what I thought. I was like 13 when that movie came out. Like, I wasn't really well versed in the world of what you do with your jizz. This guy caught it and then held it and waited and then hit her. Like, he's at the fucking ESPN Quarterback Academy. It's impossible. It's an impossible shot.
Cut to a 13-year-old Dave Lozo with a target on his wall that has Jodie Foster's face on it, trying to figure out if he can make the angles work.
Like, how does he – what if he's not ready to finish yet? How does he – wait, but how did – and then, like, someone's like, oh, well, in the book. Oh. And then still I was like, but wait.
Mm-hmm. The thing I always wonder is, like, the first time I ever saw that movie, did I know that Lecter was wearing that cop's face? Because now when you see it, it's pretty obvious that it's, like, Anthony Hopkins with a bush on his face. But, like, when I first saw it, was it a big surprise when he, you know, sits up in the ambulance like the Undertaker and takes off his face and it's him? I don't know if I got fooled by that or not.
I think I probably did.
Yeah.
But
the only other thing in that movie that completely fucks me up, along with the Dr. Lecter part at the end, was
Dr. Lecter.
Chris Isaac showing up as an FBI agent in that one scene. You're just like, oh, Chris Isaac's totally here.
Chris Isaac went from like Silence of the Lambs to an episode of Friends all in like 2 weeks when they were trying to make him an actor.
Yeah. And you're just looking at it and you're just like, oh no.
Dr. Lecter. By the way, I don't know what police protocol is, but if there's an unconscious man on an elevator, is protocol to shoot him in the leg to make sure he's not dead?
When you think it's Hannibal Lecter, it is.
Yeah, but he's motionless on top of an elevator. You probably can't shoot a guy. That's probably a violation of civil liberties.
I think your dog's hurt real bad, mister.
Don't hurt my dog.
God, that movie's the best. Oh, but the other ridiculous thing about Bill Peters' press conference was, as I mentioned on Twitter, it wasn't that he was familiar with the Flames roster. It's that he knew everybody's nickname and, like, all the players. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, he did a 6-minute soliloquy in which he talked about every player on the roster intimately.
Because,
you know, it's like
he's been ready since March.
Right. He's just like, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, I think we got a real strong defense. Gio, of course, leading the way. His three kids, his dog, his dog Scraps. Really like what he did. I like that window treatment he put into his rec room the other day. It was pretty good. I mean, better than what he had a few months ago. But anyways.
I don't know if people know this, but Dougie Hamilton's wife, Carol, she makes an unbelievable lasagna that I've had more than one occasion. She puts some sort of like sun-dried tomatoes in there that really adds flavor to it. And I think it'd be really good there on the second pair for us.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest with you. Like, I've been really paying attention mostly to the Carolina Hurricanes for the last few months, but I just want to give a shout-out to TJ Brody's nephew for winning that big softball game the other day. I know we were all waiting to see if they were going to go state or not.
Yeah, and thoughts and prayers to Michael Backlund's daughter, whose hamster died a week and a half ago, and they had to bury that hamster. And they haven't told the daughter yet what really happened. They told her that it ran away and they replaced it, but don't anyone tell her that.
But anyway, like I was saying, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau really reminds me of Jeff Skinner. Yeah, Jeff Skinner, whatever his name was, that guy.
I'm pretty sure I could really, really suck the life out of Johnny Gaudreau here once I get here and make him not as good as he could be.
I just want to say that as Calgary Flames coach, I promise to continue the tradition here in Calgary of just being good enough to not be good. I want to say that I perfected the art in Carolina.
Like, at no point will we be better than 14th or worse than 24th. That's my guarantee to you.
I'm kind of torn because, like, I want Calgary to be good because I like Gaudreau and I like Monahan. And like, I feel like that's a kind of a fun team to be good. Mm-hmm. But I also want to be completely right about Bill Peters being a mediocre coach.
Oh, yeah. That's
like, I'm torn because
I'm doubling down, basically.
Right. Because if he does well, then it's like, oh, it really was Carolina's fucking goaltending the whole time. Mm-hmm. And on all the underlying analytics were like, he is a good coach. But if he doesn't do well, if he gets fired in like 2 years. He does like the Kirk Muller special. He gets fucking fired in two years. And it's like, oh, of course we were all right.
Well, who has more talent? Would you say Calgary or Carolina has more
talent? Calgary has more talent.
I don't think it's by a lot, though.
It's weird.
They have more top-end
talent. They have better top-end talent. I think the D is probably a wash, even though the bigger names are on Calgary.
Like, their big D are getting old.
Starting a little saggy.
getting harder to get up for all. Issues. Yeah, you know, tough to get up, tough for a D that old to get up for 82 times. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask.
But yeah, overall, I would say that you know, Calgary's the top-end talent is better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just amazing to me how there's just a rush to grab Bill. Again, Bill Peters looks like a coach, so you have to get him.
You're right. It's a Todd McClellan thing. It's everything else. Looks like a coach.
And he's going to get probably like 3 years to do his thing there.
You would imagine.
Who's the goalie going to be?
Mike, probably Mike Smith next year. They've got some guy. They've got some players in the system that they're kind of looking forward to maybe blossoming into being the goaltender. Like Mike Smith is clearly like the stopgap.
Yeah, like if you, like that's the thing is like there's still plausible deniability. Like if Mike Smith's bad next year, you can be like, well, he's getting old. Now, he had a,
yeah, exactly. But on the other hand, though. I believe at last check they're in the Western Conference, so there will be no fucking guarantees that this team is ever going to make the playoffs with Bill Peters as the coach anyway.
But they're in, they're in the shittier division, so that's where you want to be.
I had somebody tell me the other day, like, one of the reasons that Chuck Fletcher got fired or not renewed or whatever you want to call it was the fact that, like, Leopold was looking around and being like, fuck, man, like, the Predators are great and young and the Jets are great and young and Connor's not going to be on a shitty team in theory in perpetuity. Like, we make the playoffs all the time, but we're crazy old.
Yeah. The time was right. That was the – like, they didn't wait too long. They didn't let it hang out for – yeah, they were just like, hey, you know, all of our top-end guys are old, and we need to start over again.
Before we get to the question of the week, let's talk about Venom. You saw the trailer as I did. Yeah. Did you see the Venom trailer?
I did
not, no. Nah, don't worry about it.
You're not missing anything.
It looks like the best – like someone said, as everybody's made the same joke, the best Marvel movie of 1996.
I don't get the plot. I thought Venom was a bad guy. I thought Venom was evil.
In the comics over time, he's become kind of an anti-hero because he's super, like anytime a character is super popular, like the Punisher or whatever, like they become an anti-hero.
But the Punisher was always like killing bad people, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was at first he was a vigilante that had to be controlled by heroes like Daredevil and Spider-Man and stuff. So here's the thing. I'm very much looking forward to this movie because I kind of love the idea of the internal struggle of Tom Hardy, who is blessed with these amazing powers by this thing that also is nefarious and evil. It's got a, it's kind of got a an interesting take on the source material. And really, anytime you do the thing of like a guy discovering his amazing powers and being like, I can shoot black goo at people, like it's always kind of fun.
Wait, that was actually what happened in Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
Venom was in the prison and he was just that would explain the accuracy.
But we need to talk about the real issue with the Venom trailer.
Which is Tom Hardy playing a journalist. He's way too physically fit and handsome to be a journalist.
I mean, maybe he's one of those journalists that covers like war zones. Like, that would be my only thing.
But he doesn't have an accent. He's not Tom Hardy.
He's like, I'm New Yorker. I'm Tom Hardy. I work in the war zone, and now I'm working the beat here trying to talk. Now I work about the tech industry. You're doing some nefarious things with this DNA, bada bing, bada boom. It's Tom Hardy.
Classic.
Tom Hardy and Venom. No, it's Jenny Slate's pronunciation of
I missed that. I saw people making fun of it. Yeah. I didn't realize she was in it. Jenny
Slate.
She's
Symbiote.
Wait, Jenny Slate, is she the one who was in the movie with Chris Evans where the little girl's a genius?
Yeah.
She's in this movie too? I don't love her. I don't love Jenny Slate. But I missed her mispronouncing that. I was too caught up in the whole entire plot of the whole thing. By the way, this is a Marvel movie, right? So are we going to eventually like come and bring these all back together? I saw a review for Infinity War.
Don't give anything away. I'm seeing it on the weekend.
Okay. But it was really upsetting because according to the tweet about the review, it says it's an action-packed movie, blah, 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 that leaves a cliffhanger that's going to make you upset.
Yeah, they really – it's funny.
This is supposed to be the last movie.
No,
I'm not investing anymore
after this. There's another one. There's another one after this. But remember the whole thing where there was going to be an Infinity War – Parts 1 and 2, and then the Russo brothers like, no, we're going to rename it just Infinity War, and then it turns out it was all a fucking clever ruse. It's still a two-part movie, basically.
Oh, so it is a two-part
movie. Yeah, it is, kind of. I mean, there's a cliffhanger for the most part.
Oh, I thought they were going to kill four people and then bring out our Avengers in the next one.
Our name at Bar Trivia last night, by the way, we came in fifth. It was disappointing. Our name was spoiler: Iron Man Dies. With name of our team.
You deserve to come in fifth.
The first time Quizmaster said it, someone at the table next to us was like, that's fucked up. It was like mission accomplished. All right, so the draft lottery is this weekend in the NHL, as you know. The question of the week here on Puck Soup is, which team is the most deserving and which team is the least deserving of the top pick in the draft? We assume draft Rasmus Dahlin. And Ping Pong Bundy, holy shit, what a great name that is. Least deserving Buffalo, most deserving Edmonton. So I can hear Wish as Edmonton Bain saying to Buffalo,
you think the draft lottery and final standings are your ally? I was born of the draft lottery.
I was born in the ping pong balls.
I like that a lot. Andy Keynes writes in, most deserving the Flames, because if you're dumb enough to trade an unprotected pick these days, you should be punished for it. Ah, so they're saying the Islanders by virtue of that.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Least deserving the Flames because it would make me weep loudly in public, and that's not a good look for a large, hairy man. I don't know. I feel like the more sensitive we are in this day and age, the better it is for all humanity.
Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Adam Brandt writes in, as long as the goddamn Oilers don't win the lottery, I'm relatively cool with anyone else winning. I'm kind of there with you, my friend.
See, I want the Oilers to win it because it'll be funny.
Some men won't want to watch the world burn.
Right. Yeah. I found a ping pong ball as big as a grapefruit, and it had an Edmonton Oilers logo on it. What did you do? How did you stop them? We burned the draft lottery.
That's right.
This city just showed you that it could have all the number one picks at once.
I'm not wearing Oilers pads.
Mike says Buffalo most deserving because, come on, it's Buffalo. Chicago is least deserving, although them winning might cause the longest Lozo sigh ever, so I'm semi-rooting for it. That'd be pretty accurate.
Yeah. I want the thing that's going to either make me or other people the angriest. So Chicago and Edmonton, for sure.
Aunt Chalupa writes in, if the Oilers win again, my theory that we all actually died last election day will be proven true because it means we're all in hell.
It does feel like it, man. Vegas is winning playoff series. Nothing makes sense anymore.
Clayton Anderson writes in, the Oilers are the least deserving and the Sabres the most, but it's a win-win when it goes to the Oilers. Shirelli could flip the first overall for a hard-to-play-against forward like Ryan O'Reilly.
Send it to Florida for like the rights to Dave Boland.
Rogue Run writes in, Sabres are most deserving. A lot of people say the Sabres because they make things and rivalries better for their division. Hands down, the Oilers are least deserving. They are the black hole of NHL where stars go to never be seen by American viewers ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Very good point. Ryan writes in, least Edmonton, most St. Louis, to make up for having to take Eric Johnson between years that had Crosby and Kane. Wow. That's a really good one, too.
That is pretty bad.
Here's a good one. Carl Etheridge, Dallas, no draft luck in so long. Then we take the pick and trade it to Edmonton, who inevitably overpays dramatically while everybody else screams incoherently.
Mm.
It works out for everyone, though, because somehow Edmonton manages to ruin Darlene and we all laugh and laugh.
Hmm.
Don Johnson's nostril.
Sure.
That's got to have some holes in it. Canadiens most deserving because the hockey gods sought to punish Sam Pollock for figuring out how to actually draft players well before everyone else. So the gods said, sure, have another first overall. I hear that Wickenheiser kid is real good, and we still suck 38 years later.
Wow. That's a story.
It certainly was.
It's a yarn.
Finally, Sean writes in, most deserving are Buffalo or Arizona. Neither have done anything to actively shoot themselves in the foot while trying to rebuild, like trading Hall for Larson or thinking at DeKaiser as a top 4D. Least is Ottawa because Melnick is a shithead and doesn't deserve to be rewarded for it.
Yeah, I'm with that. That's my assessment too. Buffalo or Arizona gets it, great. Ottawa, no.
My assessment is, all right, least is Ottawa. Yeah. I would take Edmonton over Ottawa.
Me too.
Yeah. Only because I love Connor, contrary to popular belief.
Puck soup.
And I want the only good things for him. And my most deserving is – well, my most deserving is Detroit, just to give them some focus as a franchise. But the real answer is Chicago, just to see – again, to watch the world burn.
Some men just want to watch the world go to original six teams.
All right. That's Puck Soup for this week. You can find me on ESPN, all my writings there. Thursday will be the beginning of our Caps Penguins coverage on the site right now. It came out today as we do the podcast. The 10 lowest moments in the Capitals playoff history against the Penguins.
See, you're just mean.
I'm the best.
When did I become the positive Capitals person and you became the negative Capitals person? When did this vice versa thing happen?
All feeding into the switcheroo that is apparently going to happen where the Caps beat the Penguins in five, was it?
Or six.
Okay.
Five or six.
You can find me at Wyszynski on Twitter. You can listen to my other podcast, ESPN on Ice. We had a long interview with Tom Dundon this week that a lot of people have checked out, and we do appreciate that. We didn't thank everybody for the love that you gave the Super Troopers episode of this podcast. The Puck Soup Bump,
ooh,
once again, in effect.
$15 million.
Yep. The boys will be able to probably make weed.
Weed fest, pot fest.
You said the wrong one, and they corrected you.
It's pot.
Yeah,
but I think they need to do some damage against the Infinity War stuff this weekend, mm-hmm, still. But we are
closer than ever to having Das Bong in the Weed Fest sequel. And what do you have to say for yourself?
I'm gonna go take a pee and fart a bunch of times.
There it is. And the world is back on its axis.
There we go.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you.
You are drunk.
Next week. Please do check out Look Who's Talking as well, featuring Richard E. Grant as the knife. Thanks, everybody.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hoggy and nonsense. Part 2.